Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Below, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. All entrepreneurs know how important it is to get off to a good start in their business. Today, I'm talking with a visionary who wants your start to not just be good, but wicked good. Brian Genesco is the mastermind behind Wicked Start, an online platform designed to help small business owners and early-stage entrepreneurs realize their dreams of starting a business. Brian has collaborated with a team of professionals who share this vision, creating a suite of tools, resources, and community to help clients manage the business startup process each step of the way. Brian was raised in Wisconsin but moved to New York over 15 years ago, bringing with him a commitment to hard work and good humor. He has over 15 years' experience in finance and entrepreneurship, having successfully founded multiple businesses. Prior to Wicked Start, he co-founded New Kitchen, an online food retailer serving healthy and delicious prepared meals. Starting from the ground up in New York City, he built the company into a multi-million dollar business, serving influential residents and celebrities, who helped solidify New Kitchen's reputation. In late 2008, he sold the business to Nutrisystem, a national weight loss company. Brian's goal is simple: to increase the rate of business success. Our conversation in this podcast covers a variety of ways you can do that, as wide-ranging as the importance of bringing heart and compassion into your work, to allowing yourself space to be down in the dumps. All of this while maintaining your introvert integrity. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thanks, Beth. I'm really excited to be here as well.
Well, as I read about you and your current company, Wicked Start, I noticed that you describe yourself as a serial entrepreneur. And I'm wondering, just starting one business has been enough for me. So I'm wondering, where do you get the energy and what inspires you?
Very, very good question. I think once, at least for me, it's in my blood. So once I left the corporate world and I described myself as a corporate refugee turned entrepreneur, I love the freedom that it entails. While I find myself working a lot harder and definitely thinking more creatively, and I'm much more resourceful, working many hours around the clock, I just find that it's in my blood. And the idea of returning to the typical corporate job is not something I'm looking forward to doing. But to answer the question, what inspires me? God, there's so much. In particular, people who problem solve creatively, I'm attracted to those types of people. A lot of artists. And I think the reason being is that these are the seeds of entrepreneurialism. I think it's easy to go into a corporate role where you're given a defined set of rules, expectations, and job responsibilities. But as an entrepreneur, you set those rules. You set those expectations. So I like to think of an entrepreneur as an artist in an odd kind of a way. But I think it makes a lot of sense. Maybe it's a little bit of a loaded question, given my penchant for contemporary and pop art. But I also love people who succeed by overcoming adversity or truly difficult and challenging situations. I think throughout life we're always confronted with really remarkable people, whether they're people in entertainment, such as Oprah Winfrey, or other people. I think, you know, anyone who's really taken a difficult situation and turned it around and worked it to their advantage, and in particular in the world of entrepreneurialism, where you've had to take economic opportunity into your own hands and create something new.
Yeah, what you're sharing here is reminding me of Daniel Pink's A Whole New Mind, when he's talking about.
Oh, I read that. That is incredible.
Yeah, it's in, and that the traits of the right brain thinker are so valuable in business. And as you were describing the entrepreneur's artist, that came up for me. So much about entrepreneurship is, yes, there are steps to go through and whatnot, but you really have to be creatively problem solving all the time and not lockstep mm-hmm. into something, and very artistic in a way.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
And so I know from the mutual acquaintance that introduced us that you're an introvert. And that was one of the reasons I was so intrigued to talk with you, besides just your journey. And so I'm wondering how has being an introvert played a role in your journey?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because, I consider myself very middle of the road. I am extroverted to a certain extent. I you know, go out and I'm energized by people in a certain way. However, I need an equal, if not more, time to recharge in my own way, where I can retreat to my own space. Very much a classic introvert attribute, I think. So it's an interesting dichotomy in a way, because I think that, to get back to your question of how has it played a role in my entrepreneurial journey, I think that to be a successful entrepreneur, you need to navigate many circles. You have to be incredibly flexible, which I think I do quite well. However, it takes a lot of energy. You're constantly engaging with many people in various situations. So for me, as I might have highlighted before, it's important to retreat to my space. I have a house out in the country, and I like to go there. I like to be alone at the end of the week or whenever I really can get the chance to go there, and that's where I process a lot of information. It helps me think more deeply about these critical decisions that I need to make, whether it's about a new business direction to go in, a challenge that I'm having with a particular colleague or a business partner, or as I'm engaging in right now, fundraising, raising additional money to grow the business at the next level. There are a lot of challenges that you have to go through. And while I'm out there being a good cheerleader, I need to step back. I need to be able to think about this thing in a way that's very meaningful and deep for me, and I need to do that on my own, alone.
And in your business, do you have, it looks like you have a team of people that you work with. And how do you balance being the introvert leader with your team, like your energy needs and their own personalities and needs?
I think because of that, I've attracted probably quieter people. My technical co-founder is very opposite me. She's very animated. She's very gregarious, very outgoing. So we connect on certain points, but we operate very differently. And I think you need that yin and yang. So to answer the question specifically, while I might attract people that are probably a little bit quieter, I think it's important to purposefully look for a team that can complement your skill set, because you can't be class A at everything. But what you can do is hire people around you that can fill those voids, fill those gaps, and fill the responsibilities that, frankly, I'm not particularly interested in fulfilling myself. So I think the success for any business, especially a new business, is to find that skill set that complements yours.
Yeah, I appreciate the point about that you connect on certain things, but how you get there, how you do them might look different, you know, from person to person. And it seems like that would be more of an ingredient to success, in terms of, you know, having people that you're working with that agree with the vision and the values of the business. And how you get there is a negotiation, but if you've got that at your core, then introverts and extroverts can definitely coexist happily and even very productively and effectively.
I couldn't agree more. I think you need both types of personalities. If everybody is type A, go, 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 out there, I think you're going to have a really hard time sustaining a business in the long term. I mentioned yin and yang. I think you need that balance. I believe that's really critical for a successful business. You know, it's an interesting situation, because my last business partner, he and I were very similar. And we ultimately succeeded. I think later we grew a very big business, but there were a lot of lessons learned. And in particular, with the kind of people you hired, we both gravitated toward hiring people just like us, which is not, that's not necessarily the right way to go. You need to think about what the role is, what the expectation is, and you know, interview based on that. And as a matter of fact, I would often have somebody else outside of my circle interview prospective candidates first, so that I wouldn't bias the opinion, if you will.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great observation and noticing, because we do tend to stick with the people we know because there's some sort of comfort there. And but remembering that we need to bring in, like you said, the complementary skills, and that's where that balance will help us be successful.
Yeah, that's correct. And before we move on to the next point, I'd like to also address the point you mentioned on, you know, coexisting. I think anybody, regardless if you're animated, not animated, quiet, loud, I think it's important that you always, always have a respect for people that you work with, for different situations, have a tolerance. That's non-negotiable. That is definitely a core value. And I certainly think that anyone that works with me and who works in the environment recognizes that. So regardless if you're an introvert or an extrovert, there is that mutual respect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that mutual respect comes with awareness and understanding and getting behind that mission. And it sounds like you are a very aware individual as well as an aware entrepreneur when it comes to how you build your team intentionally. And I admire that a lot.
Thank you.
So speaking of, you know, the core values, one of the things that I noticed as I was reading about Wicked Start was in the About Us description on your website, you put a lot of emphasis on heart and compassion as ingredients for building a successful business. Can you tell us more about how you believe that those traits contribute to entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. They contribute very meaningfully, certainly in the long term. Again, going back to mutual respect, respecting the worth and dignity of each person and their contribution, you're going to have a team that's going to be happy. They're going to be productive. They're going to work with you. They're going to work for you. If you create an adversarial relationship or one where there's fear, it may work in the short term, but I can guarantee you in the long term, it's not going to be a productive relationship. We're all here together. I believe that, you know, we're all connected. I believe that you need to do good. You need to help others. I think by you helping others, you will grow yourself, and it will only return to you exponentially. So it's a big cycle. It's a very, very big positive cycle. I'm not suggesting a kumbaya love circle or anything of that sort. But I do feel that you can still have a very productive work environment. You can show compassion. It doesn't mean that you're soft. It doesn't mean that you're lax on expectations. I think it's quite the opposite. I think you can be very determined. You can be very focused. You can be very clear about what the outcomes are or the expectations are. And I just think you have a better way of achieving them because you're doing it in a collaborative fashion. That has proved to be an ingredient for success, at least for me and in the environments that I've worked in long term, for sure.
Yeah, I'm doing a training right now where we're talking about effective confrontations. And one of the points we make is about the power of positivity and bringing that heart and compassion into the workplace. And just like you said, it's not about kumbaya moments. It is about, though, creating an atmosphere where you're emphasizing the heart and the positive more than you are the negative, so that when you do touch on things that aren't going so well or need to, you know, go into that problem-solving mode where it's not the happiest place to be, it's in a much more positive context, and there's a lot more trust within the group.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. In my own experience, I do have to work on that. That's definitely an area I'm very positive, and I have a very can-do, very compassionate. But part of what I need to work on, you mentioned self-awareness earlier, is I often don't like conflict. So, you know, we have things that we need to work on, and that's definitely an item that I've been able to address since I've become more self-aware in the years since I've become an entrepreneur. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a good or bad thing. I tend to think it is something that needs to be addressed because some confrontation is good and it's healthy, and how you manage that can really help lead to a more successful outcome, and that people recognize what the, you know, responsibilities are, what expectations are. It leads to better relationships with vendors, with clients, with customers, and I think it just sets a realistic tone. So, but that is something that I am working with, and I'm certainly not going to compromise my compassion, but at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, a strength that I need to work on, I need to build more, is you know, the ability to manage confrontation.
Yeah, and I can affirm that that's something I think we all share. My experience so far of teaching hours and hours of this course is that we all have that discomfort with confrontation, and it's something that we'd rather avoid. And I think, and I don't know, you know, to go to the extrovert-introvert place, I think it's probably equally uncomfortable for each for different reasons. And I think introverts might have a little bit more of a challenge because we internalize things.
Yes.
We make up a lot of stories, potentially.
Well, you try to compensate. I find that you try to compensate. I completely internalize, you know, any extrovert quality that I may have goes out the window when it comes to this. So I completely retreat. And that is actually something that I think is probably a broader subject area worth discussing more, probably at another time.
But, yeah.
when I have that alone time to think and digest, absorb and think about my next steps, oftentimes it may be relating to some issue that it requires some sort of confrontation. And by being alone and internalizing it, you somehow justify things in your own way, or you might find unhealthy workarounds. So I've recognized this, and of course if it's detrimental, I obviously will bring it to the surface as soon as possible, and I will deal with it, but it's still a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you find that, you know, through your work or personal connections, you know, do you have some people that you trust that you go to with those things to serve as a sounding board when you feel like you've been inside too much?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes. And, you know, a major word of wisdom here is find a community. Find a community of people as diverse and different from you as possible that you can, where you have that trust. For example, I belong to the Entrepreneurs Organization, EL. It's a global organization of entrepreneurs, and I joined as an annual membership. It's it's basically a nonprofit. It is a nonprofit, but they get together and you go to different events. But what I love about it, and this is my particular community, the reason why I mention it, is every month we have a forum where there's eight of us in my particular forum, and we all come from different businesses. We have different backgrounds, very different personalities. If I had to pick these other seven folks out from the crowd, they would not be the first seven people I would pick to be in my close group of confidants, which makes it all the more powerful because you're kind of pulled together in a way that you're different. We met each other during a training period, and at the end of the training, they said, you guys are all different enough. You're in different businesses where we want you to form this forum, and that was 5 years ago. Every month we meet for 4 hours, we close that door, we share personal experiences, personal challenges, triumphs, things that are going well, and we all learn and share with each other, and we try to apply things that are going well with one of us to all of our businesses. Things that are not going well, we share experiences and try to figure out how we can move to a better place, a different place. How do we grow our business? How do we scale? So, yes, absolutely. Finding a community is really critical. And for me, that's the Entrepreneurs Organization.
And I love that you're emphasizing that within that community to make sure that you're not falling into the birds of a feather flock together kind of thing, where you say, okay, so I'm a coach, so I need to hang out with all the coaches, or I'm a, you know, an accountant, so I need to find all the accountants. While we might feel some comfort in the commiseration that can happen there because we're all sort of in the same boat, we also probably are all having the same struggles and getting with other businesses who are having different challenges. They might have, you know, a solution to ours, and we might have a solution to their challenge that we never would have discovered if we hadn't sort of crossed that line.
Bingo, you hit it right on the head there. That's exactly it. It is so that's the easy way to find, oh yeah, these are people I connect with. I know them, or they're like me. I'm going to join that particular community. Yeah, of course. But, you know, it's so much more interesting when you're forced to do something. Forced, I laugh because this has turned out to be the closest group of my life here. But you're right. You birds of a feather flock together, and then you commiserate, and that's fine for a little bit. But what is it? Is it group therapy, or is it meant to be restorative, reparative, and help you move to higher ground? And that's what you need to think about. And it's not meant to be comfortable, at least initially. So I think finding a community where you can get honest feedback, different feedback, and as you pointed out, people in different businesses have a lot to contribute that you can apply to your own business.
Absolutely. And that serves as a great segue to my next point of curiosity. And that's, through Wicked Start, you're providing startups with the tools they need to get off on the right foot. What are the most, you know, we just talked about that birds of a feather flocking together, which might be helpful in the beginning, but does not necessarily serve you in the long run. I would see that as maybe a common mistake that startups might make. But what do you see as the most common mistakes that startups make that lead to the high failure rate that we often hear quoted about small businesses?
Yeah, well, at a very high level, simply put, most businesses fail for reasons related to poor planning. People will say, I ran out of money. There's too much competition. All of those items can be addressed with proper planning. For the most part, there are obviously, if there's a natural disaster, there are incidents, great recessions happen. So, but to be fair, most businesses, when they're started, people don't take the time necessary to really plan to think, first of all, it may be a great idea, but am I the person to execute it? So do I, number one, have the experience to do this? Have I thought about how it is I'm going to make money off of this? How is it I'm going to get the money to do this? Do I have enough personal resources to help me create a sample of the product or service, or a prototype, as some people like to think of it, certainly in the technical sphere? And if so, then let me think about the planning to think to figure out what is it that I need to do to get this business off the ground. So my first reaction is get the experience that you need, and get that by working in the industry. Find mentors, people to help, people who are seasoned, who've been through this before. Even if it's a different industry, you can still learn from them. And get a product prototype working, even if it's a little piece of it. That way you know, is this worth really investing more time, effort, and potentially money to actually launch this business? So once you have those three components in place, then you're ready to get the funding and then engage in a low-cost marketing strategy, set up the office, and get all the other stuff going. Sure, there's still going to be failures, but I can guarantee you they're going to be at a far, far lower rate.
So planning would involve the, making sure you've got the experience so that you've got that. And I thought it was, do you see many businesses where somebody says, oh, I have this great idea, even if they've never worked in that industry before, and they just go?
Absolutely. Well, I did answer your question before and really focused on planning, but, what I've tried to do, at least with the Wicked Start platform, because it can be so variable and all over the place, I based the Wicked Start platform on 10 steps, essentially. And that's based off of conversations with hundreds of entrepreneurs, not just my own experience, and I've broken it down into 10 steps. And within each step, there are a number of action items you need to do. And the very first one that any new entrepreneur or aspiring business owner needs to go through is just figuring out at a high level what it is, what their idea is. Is it a highly competitive market, meaning are there a lot of people already in the space, or a lot of people doing that? How is it you're going to make money? Are you selling a product? Are you doing a subscription? Are you the right person to do this? A couple other attributes, like are you ready to be the entrepreneur? I think it's important to, at a high level, go through that. I think to answer the question specifically about great ideas and not no experience, I kind of fell into that bucket myself. And so can it work? Yeah, I'm living proof of that. But even with that being said, I didn't just jump, make the leap, so to speak, from corporate America into New Kitchen, the online diet service that I co-founded. I spent a year and a half planning for it. But even with that planning, I didn't have any real experience in the food industry. Or in the diet industry for that matter. All I knew is that I felt good about healthy eating and healthy living. I knew that I wanted to help people with a better life. But I did know that I needed some experience. So I did take some courses in restaurant management, but I didn't have solid experience. And that worked against me. I almost went under. There's two distinct times that my business almost failed because I didn't have the right experience. And I was making decisions that were taking us down the wrong path. So absolutely, the people that come all the time, and the first thing I will say to them, get experience. Go through step one, and then step two is get the experience and find seasoned mentors, people that can help you navigate these murky waters.
Mentoring, yeah, that just popped into my head of, would you recommend that someone, it seems like no matter if you have the experience or not, to find that industry mentor to help you through that time.
Finding mentorship is critical. I have mentors. I've been through this a couple of times now, but every situation is different. Every situation is unique, and I'm still growing. I'm still learning, and I find some of the challenges might be a little different today than they were 8 years ago when I started my first significant business. But what I'm finding is that the value that I'm gaining from these mentorships, from the relationships, both financial advisors, people who are helping advise me on how to go about raising capital, how to structure deals, to people who are actually prominent players in the startup world, people that I can admire. And mentors can take many forms, whether it's an author whose books you love to read and you just absorb and you just read book after book and you apply some of that, that discipline, that dogma, that doctrine, however you want to think of it, to your own business. that person could be considered a mentor versus someone who you meet with for coffee every week, every month, you know, who can provide that sage wisdom. And the point is you don't have to listen to them, but clearly they might have achieved some level of success. So they obviously have done certain things right. So it's important, in my opinion, to listen to hear what they have to say. And I mentor a lot of people myself. I'm a part of the Founder Institute. So I'm talking to, you know, eager, aspiring entrepreneurs, small business owners all the time and sharing a lot of what I've learned, with them. And, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see the eagerness, the anticipation, the joy of having an idea and the ability to want to create, to helping them recognize some of the challenges that they may face as they start their startup journey.
It seems like mentorship is the gift that keeps on giving in terms of, you know, if you are mentored and then you mentor others, what I've noticed is if I'm just now getting to that point where a new coach might contact me and say, oh, can I talk to you about how you started your business and things like that? And I'm always very flattered and very I feel very grateful for the opportunity to talk to that person. And a lot of it is wonderful because it sometimes gets me back to basics and reconnects me with those fundamentals that are so important that sometimes I can kind of lose sight of those in the day to day.
I agree completely with that. I think something I struggled with was thinking of it almost as competition. Like, oh, I can't talk to that person because they're sort of, or they are in my space and it's just too competitive. I'm not going to have anything to do with them. I think, yes, you need to be mindful of some of that, but I've grown to realize that it's a lot about co-opetition. So it's competition that you can work with. And at the end of the day, if they operate with integrity, you both can help each other build bigger businesses. So I think that's a pretty powerful place to be. So rather than go into a situation thinking, oh, I'm not going to talk to this person or I'm not going to have anything to do with this person, think about it in a way, how could you potentially work together? Maybe you can't, but at the same time, it doesn't hurt to understand and learn a little bit more about how they're doing their business versus how you're doing it. Obviously, you're each doing something that's unique to the business, that's authentically you, but at the same time, I want to see how we can work together and how we can both work to build a bigger business. I touch a little bit on, you know, you mentioned the coaching part and how, you know, you talk to other potential coaches who are coming up the ranks and, you know, I hear this a lot because, as I go out and I speak to people about, you know, starting a business, there are people who might be potential coaches, let's say, who are thinking about starting a personal development business to help people in one aspect or another. And I ask them in front of the crowd, I said, well, what is your business idea? What is your angle? And oftentimes, surprisingly many times, oh, I can't tell you because I don't want people to know because I'm just scoping it out. And I'm thinking that's just, you got to have your elevator pitch. You got to be able to describe it. And if it's that easy, should you really be doing a business around it if you think people are going to steal it that quickly?
And you make me think about something that I have grappled with and gone back and forth with since starting my business, which is, do I have an attitude of scarcity or prosperity and abundance? And if I'm coming from that scarce place, I will kind of cling to my ideas and my turf. And, you know, I can't share what my ideas are or, you know, because I'm afraid somebody else might take them or that. Or even, you know, what if I put it out there and it doesn't happen? You know, so it all seems to come around to how scarce, if I'm in that place, then I know that I'm feeling very scarce and operating from fear instead of believing, you know, there is more than enough to go around. We need all these different types of people because the same person is not going to be, you know, attracted to, you know, everybody, we need a variety of service and product providers because nobody is attracted to exactly one thing. Otherwise, we might have like one toothpaste or, you know, why do we need all these different things? It's because we all have different needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't want to turn it back on, you know, the questioner here, but, you know, what do you do when I think we both agree that living an abundant life and is the way to go, but when things aren't always going in that, what is the lesson here, and how do you prevent yourself from operating out of fear or scarcity? So I'm, you know, again, I'm not trying to turn it on you, but
that's a great
question. Any insight is always welcome.
Yeah. Well,
I
have to say my favorite quote that addresses this really directly is one that I read in a Wayne Dyer book, Excuses Be Gone. And he says, and I think it's an old English proverb, and it says, fear knocked on the door, love answered, and no one was there. And so when I hear that, you know, of course, what I think of is, you know, fear, yeah, that fear is that scarcity. And it's saying, hey, you know, there's not enough to go around, or other people are going to do this too, or if you put it out there, somebody might take it and do it better. That's the fear. But if I answer that fear that's knocking with love, the love that says, I am passionate about this. I love what I do. I believe in it. I know that I can help people. I know I'm the person to do it. If I can shift that and answer it with love, then it's like there's really no room for the fear. And that doesn't mean the fear doesn't go away, but it at least allows me to move through it, to remind myself about why am I doing this in the first place? You know, it's really, and if it's not about love, then why are you doing it? You know, not to be too harsh about it, but you know, it seems like especially with entrepreneurial ventures, you have to love it. You have to love it.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on it?
turn out on me. I love the fact you bring up Wayne Dyer because he is, you know, I discovered Wayne Dyer when I was in a valley, shall we say, about 5 or 6 years ago. And that was part of my personal growth was I read Excuses Be Gone and actually a couple of other of his great works. And that was part of my journey to recognize that the universe is abundant. And to embrace that and to truly embrace that, and as you point, you know, fear is at the door, and if you answer with love, there is no fear. I completely buy into that. There's no other reason that can account for how you move forward, how you're able to achieve, how you're able to. There is no other way. You can't chalk everything up to luck. You know,
right.
I used to think luck played a huge role, and in certain ways, if you just can't just get fine, luck can account for something. But by and large, it's how you live your life, and it's the decisions that you make. And living an abundant life and thinking in abundant terms is how you're going to move forward and how you're going to build and grow.
And that sounds like another great segue into my last question of this part of the conversation is, what are maybe three bottom line most important lessons that you've learned about what it takes to be successful as an entrepreneur?
I think I've thought about this, and I may have mentioned this before, but I really like to think of it as my three P's: passion, persistence, and problem solving. Problem solving is probably not quite grammatically correct relative to passion or persistence, but they flow into each other, and I'll start with passion. Passion, you have to love what you're doing, and so there's going to be too many opportunities to quit along the way. Things are going to get tough. A deal is going to fall through. The funding is going to fall through. You're going to have to make a very big decision. If you don't absolutely love what you're going to do, you're going to find ways to not do it. I think and that's probably more of a negative way to look at it, so focusing on the positive, it's something that you love. It's an expression of how you're living or what you're already doing to some extent. So if you're taking an idea that you are connected with or an idea that you want to see come to fruition because you believe in the outcome that ties into your own personal philosophy, something that's core to who you are, that's number one. And then number two, as I mentioned, you're going to hit a lot of roadblocks. So the only way you're going to be able to succeed or see that passion through is by being persistent, by keep knocking on doors. If one door doesn't open, then try another door. There's different ways to get at the same outcome and to be able to think creatively. For me, I go to my EO community. If I'm struggling with something, I talk to my mentor. I talk to the community. I reach out. I'll read different books. I'll retreat to my house. I need a combination of all of those items to really think about how I can move forward. But at the end of the day, you have to be persistent. Holding yourself up, lying under the sheets is not going to help you move forward.
You may
need to give a minute. Give yourself a minute.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's really bad, give yourself a night or a day to do that, but don't dwell there. You cannot dwell there because that is not going to help you move forward. So persistence. And then finally, through that persistence, you're going to have to be creative in how you, you know, tackle different problems. And so problem solving is really, really critical. And that's what life is all about. It's all about different problems and how you manage them and how you attack them and how you address them. And, you know, if you're looking for, if the solution is to find something that's problem-free, you know, then entrepreneurship clearly is not going to be right for you. And I think most jobs in life are not going to be right for you because a lot of what we do is how we grow is through problem solving. And by being problem solving, you're going to be resourceful. You're going to find innovative ways to solve different problems, which, you know, might be how your passion, it dovetails full circle with the passion because that's probably how you're addressing the passion to begin with. For me, as a concrete example, with New Kitchen, it was all about I wanted to help people eat better. I wanted to live a healthier life myself. It was something that was very core to who I am. I wanted to help people move to a higher place. How was I able to do that? By coming up with an online service that made it super easy and convenient for people to go online, answer a few questions, customize a diet plan for them. And then to make it even easier, we would have chefs and nutritionists prepare the food and deliver it directly to their door. I mean, what could be easier? So that's how it all kind of ties together.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I appreciate your acknowledgement because it has to be acknowledged that entrepreneurship is not a smooth sailing, you know, perfect kind of existence, that it can be very, well, I know I've had my dark night of the soul, you know, happen probably numerous times. And
Once? I was going to say just once?
Just once? No, numerous times. I might even be going through one right now. We'll see. But it's, but it really is, that persistence and I mean, all of those things to see it as, you know, it's not just a problem, but you are problem solving. So you're moving through something. And one of the things that I know for myself, and I don't know if it's an introvert trait or a Beth trait, but I have to, when I get into that kind of dark place and I feel like I'm in the dip, sometimes I allow myself to just sit there for a little bit. You know, just kind of let it settle in, knowing that it's not forever, knowing that I am going to come out of it, but just giving myself a little bit of space to feel whatever it is I'm feeling and then move out of it. And as you said, the important thing is, you know, when it inevitably happens, not to dwell in it for too long, to kind of get back on that horse and move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? It's interesting that you say that you dwell on that for a while because it's very zen. It's a beautiful thing, I think, and I believe that that's very much in line with my approach. I think I probably could do a better job of that. I see something bad or negative, my immediate thing is to kind of reject it and just keep going and moving forward. Well, ultimately, you do want to do that. It's important to understand, well, why is this happening? To sort of bring this on, or why is this happening? Just understand that, and just to observe it, and just don't judge it. And as you said, just observe it and go through it. I can't give you a specific time period. I personally tend to be someone who doesn't want to dwell too long in any space. Mm-hmm. So even if I'm going through something that's really good, really amazing, I will take a moment to acknowledge that because it's important to now acknowledge the good things as well. But I like to keep going. So for each person, I think it's a little bit different. So when I said, you know, you don't want to stay under the sheets for too long if you're, you know, had a bad experience, that's okay if you need to do it and if you recognize it for what you just said, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it.
Well, it seems like it's all about awareness. And, you know, there's a difference between being in that space and allowing yourself to sit there and being fully aware of what you're doing and dropping into that space and not being aware and simply wallowing in it and getting letting it drive you.
Don't you find that it really forces you to dig deeper?
Yes.
I mean, by going through this and by virtue of being an entrepreneur, you're forced to be responsible for everything. You could be working for, you know, I used to work for Morgan Stanley, and yes, there were challenges there, but frankly, I didn't have to worry. I had a paycheck that was coming through, a bonus. I had a staff. Something went wrong with the phone, the IT system. I would call for support would come up, and again, there were bureaucratic challenges dealing with colleagues, but that was okay. I didn't really have to dig too deep. I wasn't forced. I was very complacent. I was working hard, that I was complacent. As an entrepreneur, I was forced to dig deep. I don't know if you've experienced that or if you think that, but
yes,
that's a heck of a lot better place to be long term.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciated what I feel responsible for and what I feel accountable for, and what my contribution is. Those things are much much more top of mind and aware, and I'm much more intentional, I think, because while, you know, some people say, well, I want to work for something bigger than myself, and that's why I choose a more mainstream or traditional work path, because it feels like, well, if you're just in business for yourself, it's for yourself, but it's not. It's for something much bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sense of responsibility and that sense of you know, connection to the bigger thing is what helps keep that perspective.
Yeah, yeah, digging deep.
Mm-hmm.
The core theme certainly is very present right now. So
yeah, definitely.
I appreciate you discussing that, because that is a very important attribute to consider. It's not to fear the valleys, and maybe they're more than you want, but let me tell you, you're going to be a far better person because you're able to dig deep and really understand and work through those darker moments.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really enjoy the shinier ones and the brighter ones, and that will keep you going. And I think that's a stronger way.
Yeah. And what you said about being able to acknowledge and celebrate those good moments is, mm-hmm. I think, also equally important, because I know I can, and I know some of my colleagues, we can get really wrapped up in what's not going the way we want it to. And we feel like, oh, it's not going anywhere. And then we sit back and say, wait a minute, last month you did this, last week you did this, last, you know, so-and-so called you. And we forget about the small victories that are actually quite big.
Yeah. Can I share something real quick on that note?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think something I picked up recently from a session in the last couple of weeks, I've been traveling and doing some speaking, but someone had told me that at the end of the night, especially when they have a bad day, they go through and they think of 10 things that they're grateful for. And I said, that's really cool. I like that idea. And I said, why 10? Why not 3? Because 10 seems like a lot. And I said, well, the first 3 are typically going to be the same. Like, you know, you're grateful for if you're married, your spouse, your kids, or having a house over your head, which is great. You know, so we're not to discount that. But you're forced to really go through and think of other things that you might not have put in that top group. And it's those additional items that are going to really help you think about, yeah, you know what? It wasn't such a bad day, or, you know what, there are good things that could happen, or, you know, these are items that are really going to, you know, pay off in dividends down the road, or help me go to sleep a little bit more soundly tonight, which, frankly, is all that really matters at that particular moment.
Right. Yeah. And
I like that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It cultivates the attitude of gratitude and helps all that compassion and abundance thinking a lot. Mm-hmm. It makes all of that a lot easier. And, integrated, I would think. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your wonderful wisdom. I love talking with you. I love the conversation. And I'm going to wrap up our time together with a couple of closing questions. And these are ones that I ask all my guests. And the first one is, if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island, all expenses paid, but no internet hookup, and you only had room for 3 books in your suitcase, what 3 would you take with you and why?
Great question. Great question. First would be, I really, really find this to be a valuable book, and I've reread it twice now, and I'm going to keep rereading it, Wisdom of the Tao, and it's Dr. Wayne Dyer's interpretation of it, his version. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read that, but I just find that to be such a powerful, powerful translation, a powerful book, because it's based on such a sacred, ancient text that espouses this universal wisdom, which is aimed at, you know, helping us be the best that we can be, while also understanding our relationship with everything around us. I mean, we're all connected. We're all part of this universe. So I just find that to be a very, very wise, sacred text, and in particular, his translation of it, because it makes it easier for me to digest. So that's number one. Number two, more of a fun read, but very interesting, nonetheless, is Paulo Coelho's book, The Alchemist. Again, I find it's a very simple book, but because of the life lesson, I love it for the simplicity and its authenticity. I think you know, it's such a beautiful story as it unfolds, yet it starts out in one place and it brings you all the way full circle back to where you started. Mm-hmm. Everything you need is right there, mm-hmm. right there in front of you. Beautiful, simple story. So what that tells me is it always reminds you to keep things simple, and I want to kind of be lighthearted at times, as serious as things can get. So yeah. That's my number two.
And number three.
Number three. This one here is out of the ballpark here, but it's Satan's Art in Today. And this is a very thick, so the hopefully my suitcase will be a little bigger so I can get it. Encyclopedic type book.
Excellent.
And the reason why I pick this is because I haven't actually read it, but I want to because I think it's going to help me be able to explore my own creativity as an expression through different visual art mediums and understanding how many artists in contemporary society today have come to be, how they've evolved their decision-making process. You mentioned earlier Daniel Pink's A Whole New Mind, which is great. That's very academic and more theoretical with some, you know, examples and applications. But to understand the artists and how they're creating, again, I equate entrepreneurialism to an artist. And I think a book like this can really help me understand that a little bit more. It's a very big read, so I would definitely need the bulk of the first year
yeah.
to get through it. But it could be fun, scintillating, titillating, and entertaining, and provocative all at the same time.
Absolutely. And when you're done with it, it sounds like it'd be thick enough. You could use it as a footstool to reach a coconut or, you know, do whatever you need to do there. Great. And can you repeat the title of that one? Was it Art Today?
It's Art and Today, and it's by a publisher, Faden Books,
okay.
Phaidon. And they actually do a number of coffee table books, but this is a pretty comprehensive collection.
Fabulous.
Of contemporary and pop art and culture and the evolution of the movement today.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite? I know it's probably asking, like, you know, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream or, you know, anything else that we love anything of, but do you have a favorite contemporary artist that you find yourself drawn to over and over again?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, there's actually quite a few. Chuck Close, Andy Warhol, Keith Haring. I mean, everyone's heard of Warhol, but I think that's a testament to the work that he's done. There's something very, we relate to a lot of the work he's done. He'll take the pictures of Marilyn Monroe or Jackie O and he'll just do something visually stimulating with them. And those are icons, people that we connect with. And that permeates all of his art. And that's what I think makes it unique. He takes the everyday things that we see all the time and he's made them visual. He's distorted them, but I really like that. I'm fascinated by that. Is he the absolute best artist that was around? Absolutely. It's not about being the best, or being the most detail oriented. It's about taking something and turning it into something that people can connect to, that people can relate to, that creates a conversation, that creates a bond, and I get it evokes a positive feeling in me. And that's very important too. I like art that evokes a very positive feeling. Not to belabor this question or anything, but I translate that to Marina Abramović, who I think was a fantastic visual, she's a current artist, she's alive, and she's done a lot of dark art, as I like to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's done a lot of, she'll bring herself as close to the brink of death as possible in many of her exhibits and many of the activities she engages in. And I'm drawn to it because I'm fascinated by it, but it's also very dark. So it's not something I'd want to hang, per se, on my wall or my house because I tend to be drawn toward light, toward bright. And again, I think she's brilliant because she just did an amazing exhibition at MoMA.
Mm.
But that's an artist who I relate to, but I definitely connect more with the Warhol or Chuck Close, who I just think are brilliant, brilliant artists.
You bring up a good point, though, about the light and the dark and how we need both. And to, you know, I'm guessing as you're drawn to those dark art, that it resonates because there's something inside of you that it's tapping into. And it's something that's really important, I think, especially – well, as human beings, as entrepreneurs, because we just talked about that dark night of the soul,
mm-hmm.
to be able to be okay with some of that darkness because it's an inevitable mm-hmm. part of the journey. And it's wonderful you found an artistic expression of that.
Yeah, and you're right. Again, you can't deny it. You're far too Pollyanna if you try to deny that it doesn't exist. It's one thing to actually engage in it, and do something that's harmful or unhealthy to you, but it's another thing to observe and understand and just see. I think that's really important. And what I do find interesting about certain activities are something I am drawn to that is a healthier version of the repetitive nature, certainly that you see in Marina's work, is Kundalini yoga, for example. In Kundalini, you often do things that are, one might think torturous on your body, like holding an arm position for 31 minutes. It's a very long period of time, and you're about to die. But what that does is you're creating energy. You're actually engaging in a very, very sacred and old form of yoga. And there's a lot of benefits that you can reap in terms of, getting rid of that fear, calming your anxiety, if you have any, just putting yourself in a very present place. And the whole point of that is to bring you to a present place. So you can do that both through the light and through the dark. I just try to do it in what I feel is a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you for sharing your personal perspective on that and the art. And it's wonderful just to get another glimpse at how your mind works, because that definitely gives some good lessons for other people, because they might not think of, well, what does art have to do with the journey? And it absolutely has a place, and how we are, it's everything. So, well, how can people learn more about you and Wicked Start?
Well, you can go to wickedstart.com, and I have a couple of videos that I've done to help inspire people through my own personal, as I like to think of it, as a video bio. But the whole point with Wicked Start isn't about me, it's an expression. I want to bring together people who are thinking about starting a business, people who just have an idea, or people who are in the early stages of starting a business. And in particular, I think it's really attractive to an introvert because you do it in your own way, in your own space. It's you set up an account, you answer a few questions, you get your own personalized roadmap of startup action items. You have a question, there's a community to ask, get answers from experts. You can weigh in on what your peers are doing and saying. And then, of course, there are resources to help you plan, set up, fund, market your startup. So I think, that's the next phase of what I'm doing. I want to help businesses get going. And I believe through the wickedstart.com platform, I've been able to do that. And I certainly will be more engaged. I'm going to be setting up biweekly webinars, go-to meetings, just to introduce myself and to talk to new entrepreneurs, so people sign up and they want to have a conversation, or they want to meet other people who've just signed up. I want to keep that going, keep that dialogue, and keep that interaction going for people that may be comfortable doing that. If not, you can always, just keep it at the distance, using your PC in any place you see fit.
Yeah, sounds very introvert friendly. You can go, you can bring in the personal aspect as much or as little as you want, but it gives you everything you need. Well, thank you. And really quickly, I know when you say Wicked Start, we've got variations on, the definition of wicked. Where did wicked come from for that?
Well, I like to think of, it's definitely a slang definition of the word. It's, being in the East Coast is a Bostonian definition. Definitely didn't think of it from that perspective. It's an irreverent play on the word wicked, and I think I'm taking the term masterful. I think today, in this day and age where it's easy to start a business, I think you have to be creative in how you start a new business. So my take on it was, it's a masterful way, a new way of starting a business. So that was it. I think it's fun, and it's irreverent as well. So I think there's a couple of, there's a double entendre for sure there. And it definitely gets a lot of attention. So I'm really happy for that. And I think of it in a very positive way. So, I think in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, it's probably definition number 9, under slang, masterful, creative. So, we have to scroll down a little bit. So it's certainly not the intention of, the Wicked Witch of the East here.
Right. No, it's just, that's wicked. something that's kind
it's
of
wicked cool.
Wicked cool, exactly. I think of cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that little backstory. Well, thanks.
Oh, of course.
Thank you, Brian. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and I know that you've offered not just information, but inspiration for anyone who's listening to this and is especially at that startup phase of their business, or they might be many, many years into it and are looking for that jolt of inspiration. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. It's been a really, really delightful conversation, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Beth Below, the Introvert Entrepreneur. I hope you enjoyed this podcast interview with Brian Genesco of Wicked Start. You can learn more about Brian and Wicked Start at wickedstart.com. To be notified of future podcasts from the Introvert Entrepreneur, you can subscribe by email, RSS feed, or through iTunes. To find me on iTunes, just type the word introvert in the search bar in the audio podcast section. If you enjoy these podcasts, I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and share these interviews with friends, family, and colleagues. You can also find out more about how to hire me for coaching, trainings, and speaking engagements at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And be sure to join us for more community and conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next time.